This is an iHeart podcast.
We're going to take a walk down memory lane. We're going to talk about redistricting. We're going to make fun of Elizabeth Warren. That's always a good time. We're going to honor the fallen. What a night tonight on I'm Right. Okay, time for our least favorite thing on this show. I know it's hard. I know it's heavy, but you know it's something that matters to us. I know it matters to you, honoring the fallen who die in training, who die in service to this country, not charging a machine gun nest in time of war, but serving this country and giving their lives for it. It is a dangerous thing to serve in the United States military, and it has to be. And the USS George Washington was off the coast of Australia, and Airman Jose Antonio Rivera Lynch IV went over the side, and we lost him to the deep. So say a prayer for him. Say a prayer for his family. Can't imagine the agony they're going through right now. But that young man served his country honorably and gave his life for his country the same way anybody did in a war anywhere, and we honor his sacrifice. Now, we are going to get to this redistricting talk because that can be really politically wonky, and it can really go over a lot of people's heads, myself included, so we're going to dig into that. We will. We'll talk a bit more about the Russia hoax stuff. Keeps getting worse for the communists, but I wanted to walk down memory lane really quickly, and this maybe a little painful. Maybe it'll make you sad. Maybe it'll make you angry. But none of that's why I'm doing this. We're going to walk down how insane our culture got, because we went through a period of time when communists achieved ultimate cultural power in this country in every way, from the presidency to corporations to everything. They achieved ultimate political power. And then they proceeded to make everybody miserable, to make everybody hate each other, to destroy as much as they could destroy. And so when we were under assault like that, when the communists were battering down the gates like that of our culture, that was a time of revelation for many people. Hopefully it was a time of revelation for you, even revelation about yourself. What I mean by that is when the evil forces have controlled everything and they're attacking everything, you will find out who's a coward and who's courageous. You will find out who will stand and who will falter. You really find out who the evil people, the evil entities are. And look, I'm not going to talk about the freaking Sydney Sweeney stuff, which is so overblown and done by now. It's brutal. It's been going on for a week. But let's we'll play this very briefly here. Why did this make the left so angry that there's video out today of them screaming at her?
I'm not here to tell you to buy American Eagle jeans. And I definitely won't say that they're the most comfortable jeans I've ever worn. Or that they make your butt look amazing. Why would I need to do that? But if you said that you want to buy the jeans, I'm not going to stop you. But just so we're clear, this is not me telling you to buy American Eagle jeans.
Sydney Sweeney has very keen.
You see what I did there, right?
Okay. The jeans, eh? And this is the thing. This is going to be generational, what I'm about to say. I am not ancient. I'm certainly getting older. Couldn't sleep last night. I hurt my neck. Anyway, I hurt my neck. But I'm 44. That ad you just saw, if you're young enough, you don't realize that was every fashion ad ever for my entire life. And it didn't, you know what? I take that back. It wasn't every fashion ad. It was every ad. That's just kind of how they did it, because people, all human beings, men, women, everybody, we like to look at beauty, beautiful nature, beautiful mountains, beautiful rivers, beautiful people. But human beings like to take in beauty. So it doesn't matter whether you're selling jeans or Gatorade or you're down at the local Mazda dealership, you find a handsome man, a pretty woman, And you dress them up and you say, hey, look at this pretty girl. She wants you to come buy a Mazda. Don't you want to buy a Mazda? And that was just advertising. And it has always been this way. All of human history, that's what you do. You find somebody who looks good and you use their appearance to make your product or service, whatever that is, more appealing. And that's just human nature. Honestly, the ad we just played is just the most benign thing in the world. What is it? So why would they react like this?
Should we be surprised that a company whose name is literally American Eagle is making fascist propaganda like this? Probably not, but it's still really shocking. Like, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white woman is talking about her good genes. Like, that is Nazi propaganda.
I really wasn't going to weigh in on this, but here we go. It is so difficult to grow up as a person of color, specifically a woman, and view yourself as beautiful in any sense of the word growing up in this country. I remember growing up in a predominantly white community, wishing myself out of this body, out of this culture, take my name, if it meant that I could wake up blonde-haired and blue-eyed, never having to explain who I am or worry about being accepted. That is why this American Eagle ad with Sydney Sweeney is especially off-putting.
What? We had articles from MSNBC. Good Morning America was talking about it. ESPN, one writer said he was mortified by the ad. Okay, but what happened? Well, this is where we're going to rewind. See, what happened was ugly people took over our culture. Ugly on the inside. Well, most of them were ugly on the outside too, but ugly on the inside. Communists. Communists, they hate beauty. Of any kind. It doesn't have to be physical beauty on a man or a woman. Of any kind. If something is wonderful, beautiful, if something is good, the communist views that as a threat because the communist is demonic. So anything that is good, it could be a mountain. If it's a beautiful mountain, tear it down. If it's a beautiful woman, run her out of television. No, grab some fat heifer and stuff her in some jeans and then tell everybody it's beautiful. It could be a beautiful institution, the Boy Scouts. Hey, can we make this gayer? It could be whatever, a wonderful company, a good company, whatever it is. If the communist sees beauty, success, greatness, the communist endeavors to tear it down. Now, normally, those deranged, ugly freaks are held on the street corner and made fun of the way they should be. But for a period of time in this country, they took over everything. Our buddy Bonchi at Red State pointed something out. A tweet from the NHL, the National Hockey League, a tweet from the NHL, which says, by the way, they've not deleted it. Trans women are women. Trans men are men. Non-binary identity is real. This is why we're going to take this little walk, or we're taking this little walk down memory lane. How insane would that be if any human being, anyone, of any age, any race, whatever, any human being uttered those words, a man can turn into a woman or a woman can turn into a man, that's an insane, it's not just inaccurate, it's insanity. If one person said that, you would say, wow, you're crazy. We had major sports leagues, multi-billion dollar corporations publicly declaring something that's completely insane. The evil people, the communists, tore apart this country as fast as they possibly could. Remember George Floyd? I'm never going to stop bringing this up. George Floyd died of an overdose. Derek Chauvin got lynched by the United States of America. He did. We had sports teams like the New York Mets celebrating his conviction. He's still wrongfully convicted and still sitting in prison, I might point out. Celebrating the whole thing. That is the kind of country we had. And I want to reinforce a point I made in the opening. We had that not just because the communists are evil demons, but because so many people and entities in this country are gutless cowards. When faced with communist insanity, hey, just cut your penis off, you'll be a woman. They said, oh, okay, just don't hurt me anymore. Insanity. And we need to remember this. You really, really need to remember this. Democrats, communists, they have not come out and changed their ways. They have not apologized for what they've done. They've not backtracked one iota. And the reason they haven't backtracked one iota is they don't regret a single thing. What you need to remember from that is if they ever get power again, God forbid, they will do the same or worse. Do I need to remind you this human being was made an admiral?
Hello, I'm Admiral Rachel Levine. Climate change is having a disproportionate effect on the physical and mental health of Black communities. Black Americans are more likely than white Americans to live in areas and housing that increase their susceptibility to climate-related health issues. And 65% of Black Americans report feeling anxious about climate change's impact. Through our Office of Climate Change and Health Equity and the Office of Environmental Justice, we're working with providers and community leaders to identify innovative approaches that empower communities to address the health consequences linked to climate change.
An admiral. On top of all that, it's not just that the communists took over every institution, pushed insanity everywhere they could. Anytime they thought they might meet resistance, they met it with threats and with force, including something I have never seen before. I have never seen this before. The President of the United States of America routinely threatening the American people.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
And by the way, if they want to think to take on government if we get out of line, which they're talking again about, well, guess what? They need F-15s. They don't need...
What a statement. Don't make me send my fighter jets after you. This is a reminder, not just that these people were evil and destructive, you know that, that our institutions failed us, bent the knee as fast as they could bend the knee, and failed us like gutless cowards when these communists were tearing apart this country. There weren't many people, there weren't hardly any institutions that stood strong and tall during that time. And they're going to come back to power. You know that. They're going to come back and they're going to do it again. Let's hope we're made of stronger stuff the next time. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Hans Mahnke is going to join me in a moment and discuss many, many things. I want to discuss Pure Talk with you first. I'm getting old. And as I get older, I get angrier and angrier that I can't understand any customer service people on the phone because they're all foreigners. They don't speak English that well. They don't understand English that well. And I know it's bad, but I'm so tired of having to repeat myself 10 times into the phone. No, that's not what I said. Hire Americans. I love that Pure Talk hires Americans. It's not just that they provide the same great cell service as all the big guys because they're on the same network. It's not just that you pay less. When you have to get a hold of somebody at Pure Talk, and you will at some point in time, it's a pleasant American who speaks English because they hire Americans right here at home. That means something to me. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and switch to the company that hires Americans. Okay, the Russiagate stuff. We constantly are getting more and more documents released. Cash Patel's announcing a new trove every single day. We have more we've released. We have more we're going to release. And this, honestly, it seems like he's putting his eggs in this basket. Seem to be a lot of very powerful people publicly bragging about this, which tells me, are they confident someone's going down? Someone better go down after all this bragging. Joining me now, Hans Mahnke, author of the wonderful book, Swift Boating America. Hans, is someone going to burn for all this stuff? Because there's a lot of public bragging right now.
There is, and it worries me. You know, I don't like it when they leak that there's an investigation. I'd much rather have it that I wake up and there was a 5 a.m. raid somewhere. You know, John Brennan's house was raided or whatever. And that we have not seen. That said, I agree with you. They do seem to be very confident, and hopefully these leaks are the result of confidence rather than of trying to, you know, kick the can down the road. So that's kind of what I'm hoping here. I think Brennan is probably the most likely to get charged. Just if you look at all the stuff that came out over the past few weeks, he seems to be the one that did the sort of, he wasn't as careful as the others. You know, he made some real errors along the way, documented, and I think they can actually go after him.
Okay, so rewind for me, Hans. Act like I haven't been paying attention. What's been released? Tulsi's releasing stuff, Ratcliffe's releasing stuff, Kash Patel's been releasing stuff. What do the docs actually say?
Okay, so let's zoom out here. The overall picture, 30,000 foot view, is that there was this scheme, and it was both the Clinton campaign as well as the Obama administration that decided that Trump was only elected because of Putin's help. That's the sort of thing they decided was going to be the linchpin of all of Russiagate after Trump was actually elected in November of 2016. So what's been released is from the CIA, is from the House Intelligence Committee, and it's also from various documents drafted within sort of the FBI, within the NSA, and so on. And all of those show that at the time when they came up with this this narrative that Putin elected Trump, you know, the whole thing we've been hearing for all these years, the actual intelligence said that that was fake, that there was no evidence for that. So they made it up. And when I talked about Brennan earlier, he is the one who has his fingerprints most on this. And there are some documents that show that he directly manipulated the intelligence to show that. So the actual intelligence said Putin, he probably had no preference. If he had any preference at all, it was Hillary. They turned that on its head and then came out with this public narrative that Putin elected Trump. And then they ran with it for, you know, the past 8 years. So That's sort of the core of it. And in terms of accountability, they were all involved. They were all pushing this. But I think Brennan is the one who, he was just the most careless in how they did it.
Okay, what's the Durham Annex? I keep hearing this term, Durham Annex, Durham Annex. What is it? What does it show? What is this thing?
The Durham Annex is a secret part of the Durham report, which we didn't get to see until last week. And what it says is that U.S. intelligence picked up Russian intelligence, and the Russians had intercepted or hacked, whatever word you want to use, some emails involving people at the Soros Foundation, involving people at the DNC, and various others. And from these emails, the Russians learned that Clinton had this plan to smear Trump with Russia collusion. In other words, the whole thing was a Clinton dirty trick. So the Russians knew that. And then the U.S. intercepted the fact that the Russians knew that. So they all knew that they knew. The only people who didn't know were the American public. So all of that is in that Durham Annex.
Okay, Hans, let's talk about Hillary here for a moment, because, look, lying and smearing your political opponent, it may be unethical, you may believe it's wrong, but it's also not illegal. Did Hillary Clinton do anything illegal with all this? Can she go down for anything?
I don't think she can. There's too many layers of deniability built in. So, in fact, she hired a law firm called Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie hired contractors called Fusion GPS. He's sort of a dirt mongers. Fusion GPS hired a guy called Christopher Steele to make up this fraudulent dossier. And Steele hired another guy called Danchenko to sort of insert the stories into the dossier. So each of these people and each of these groups can say, well, it wasn't my fault. It was the guy below me. And when you go back to Clinton, well, that's like five or six levels below her. So I don't think she's going to be held accountable in any meaningful way. That doesn't mean that what she did in terms of her dirty tricks campaign wasn't illegal. I mean, there's one very obvious illegality in what they did. And what they did is they pushed all this false information, this false intelligence, this made up stuff into law enforcement. They pushed it into the CIA. They pushed it into the FBI. The Clinton campaign lawyer, a guy called Michael Sussman, he walked into the FBI with this fake intelligence. He said, look, here, look at this. Well, if you give fake stuff to the government knowing it's fake, obviously that's a crime. Now, unfortunately, all those things are, you know, 8-9 years ago, so we're probably not going to have accountability for the people involved sort of on the ground, her little helpers. But certainly, you know, coming back to your question, I don't think with all this denial liability it's ever going to, you know, reach her. Which, by the way, it's the same way that the mafia operates, isn't it? That's why it's so hard to get the mafia boss, because they can always say, well, it was the underling, and the underling says it was the next underling. And then, you know, you work your way down the chain.
Well, I agree, but we do get the mafia bosses. We use RICO to get them. Yep. Can we use RICO here? I'm not a lawyer, but this seems like an ongoing criminal enterprise to me. I understand RICO is famously hard to prove, but it sure looks like it on its face.
Unfortunately, we live in this two-tier justice system. You're absolutely right. But look at what happened, for instance, you asked earlier about the Durham Annex. So they found out, the U.S. Intelligence Services found out that the Russians knew about this Clinton plot. Now, there were particular emails that the Russians had hacked. Now, Durham wanted to show that these emails are real. So what he did is he went to a court in Washington, D.C. to try and get a subpoena to get these emails from, you know, whatever server company, Google or whoever. And the judge said, no, you can't have that. So he never got to see the emails. And of course, the judge, as we found out now, was Beryl Howell, who was involved with the J6 and all these kinds of things. So when you have to jump through that extra hurdle in order to even get to RICO, or, you know, just even get some documents, and you have these judges being an obstruction, it's just going to be very difficult to get that moving.
Hans, thank you, my brother, as always. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. What's going on with all this redistricting talk and things like that? Let's talk to Wade Miller in a moment. Also, what's John Thune doing? Why don't we have these appointments? Wade Miller will join us in a moment. Before he does, I want you to get some fresh olive oil. I know that sounds weird, but man, your olive oil sucks. And mine, I've only had garbage olive oil my whole life. I didn't know that the bottles of olive oil you buy in the grocery store were kind of bland and flavorless. Do you know why they're bland and flavorless? Some of those bottles have been on the shelves for years. Did you know that? No one knows. But I never knew. Try one bottle fresh from a farm and you'll be floored at how much better your food tastes. Don't expect you to believe me. Get a free bottle. They'll send you a $39 bottle free. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. Farmfresh246.com. Get one bottle. If you don't like it, don't order anymore. You will. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back. Okay, why is Donald Trump telling the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to, and I quote, go to hell? There's a lot more to it than that, but those are some strong words from the President of the United States of America. What is Schumer doing, and how does Schumer have the power to do whatever it is he's doing? I don't know. Let's talk to Wade about it. Joining me now, my friend Wade Miller, senior advisor at the Center for Renewing America. Okay, Wade, what has Trump so hot and bothered? What's Schumer up to?
Well, does he really need an excuse to tell Schumer to go to hell? But the truth of the matter is, so Schumer knows he has some leverage on these noms, and he was trying to negotiate a big spending increase in exchange for approving these nominees. The Trump administration wisely saw that as just a total, like, non-starter, mainly because the Senate doesn't need Democrats on this. They have the full leverage to get this done. They can just show up and do their jobs. They can eat up the clock and get these nominees done. But more importantly, John Thune can just formally recess the Senate, and then Donald Trump can recess appoint all of these people. They don't need Democrats for any of it. The problem is that Senate Republicans are getting in the way. And as a reminder, pro forma sessions, which is where the Senate shows up, gavels in and then gavels out to prevent a formal recess, was always supposed to be a power of one side to prevent the president of another party from doing this type of stuff. It was never supposed to be used against your own president. So John Thune is basically intentionally depriving the ability of President Trump to use the recess appointment power while making it appear like he's trying to get a deal done to get the nominees done. It's just total DC swamp nonsense.
Okay, so Wade, I know you're intimately familiar with the players here, but most people aren't. John Thune, why? What's his deal? What's behind all this?
Well, a little bit of it is he's having to deal with his own caucus. And, you know, we've got a solid 10 or so of these that it's questionable whether or not they're really Republicans in reality, or if they just kind of campaign that way because that's their path to winning an election. But, you know, recess appointments are the historical norm. The only president in recent time that really hasn't had an expansive use of these is Donald Trump. And we control all aspects of government. If you go back to Reagan, if you go back to Bush, if you go back to the second Bush, if you go back to Obama, Clinton, they all had recess appointments. Some of them dozens, if not hundreds of them. So there's really no excuse not to just formally recess the Senate and get these things done. Instead, what they're going to do is they're going to do these pro forma sessions, eat up August, come back, work on, you know, appropriations, but it's just a gimmick process. It's not real. And then we're going to get to a CR later in the summer. So they're just eating up the clock instead of actually getting these things out of the way so we can actually have real fights on real things when they get back.
So it sounds like the Senate is doing what the Senate normally does, and this goes beyond these appointments. They're trying to slow roll change as much as humanly possible so nothing changes. Do I have that right?
Yeah, and my guess is behind the scenes, they're probably trying to convince the Trump administration that this is, like, they're trying to help them. The reality is they're not. My guess is that Trump senses that, and he's getting increasingly frustrated, not just with Chuck Schumer, but probably with Senate leadership. And as just a technical reminder, Speaker Johnson can do this too. If Speaker Johnson calls back the House and then formally votes on a recess, and then the Senate disagrees with that, then that gives the president unilateral authority to declare a recess, and then President Trump himself can recess a point and get all of these done. So even Speaker Johnson could get this done for us, but I doubt he comes back to town, and John Thune isn't going to do it without an enormous amount of pressure. And again, they are using a process now that was always intended to slow down the ability of an opposition president. They're now using it against our own president. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so not to wade too deep into the weeds here, but I kind of need to. The appointments, what are they? How important are they? What aren't we getting that we should have by now?
Well, there's about 1,300 or so positions that can be, you know, formally nominated. It's kind of ridiculous. It really shouldn't be more than a few dozen. That needs to be reformed. I don't know why we're, you know, have to have Senate approval on a fifth person down in an agency. It just doesn't make any sense. But there's a lot of, some of them are judges, some of them are U.S. attorneys, a lot of them are political appointees to the administration. But, you know, like, I have some good friends. Like, you know, Joe Edlow just got through to DHS. He's awesome. He's a great guy. Why does the Senate need to vote on Joe Edlow? You know, I understand a cabinet secretary, but why do Senate Republicans want to have a deliberative conversation about every single one of the nominees and their own president's administration? Just get them done. Just, you know, get them through the door. We don't need to have this long. You can always do a recess appointment and then come back and still do a formal hearing and then formally confirm them. But then you're not on a clock. You don't have to worry about this. But it's just a backlog. And by the way, they make it difficult to the nth degree on all of these people, five layers down, while at the same time, they voice vote all these woke admirals and generals without even a second of conversation and give them their promotion. So it's just they've got their priorities backwards. They need to be focusing more on woke generals and admirals and less on politically vetted appointees for the Trump administration.
Yeah, what's the status on all these generals and admirals? I haven't forgotten about all these poisonous little demons that have infected our military. Is Pete Hegseth getting them out?
Yes. So they are starting the process. It, you know, it's never going to be as fast as I would always love, but they are moving forward. They've been very responsive when we've highlighted some people that have been promoted that are bad. Like they just got rid of someone who was given a tenured professor position, Jen Easterly, who was the head of all of this CISA, censorship industrial complex nonsense. She was given a tenured position at West Point. Within hours of us highlighting that, the DOD had already acted, and they revoked that and pulled it back. They fired a number of generals. I think that they've reassigned some generals. So, yes, they're being very responsive, and there is some consideration, you know, versus, like, I have a political desire on something to occur, but at the same time, they have 30 years of training, and you have to weigh removing them from a leadership position and replacing that 30 years of knowledge versus they're woke and weaponized. So they can't do them all at once. They need to slowly, but long story short, yes, they're making forward progress. I'd like to see more, but they're definitely being very responsive and helpful.
All right, let's talk about redistricting, because the average normal person doesn't understand this process, doesn't understand what's happening in Texas. Why are Democrats flying to Illinois? Why is the governor threatening? Give me the 101 on this, Wade. What's happening?
So there's a lot of reasons to do it first. Remember, even the Census Bureau admitted that they undercounted Texas by more than 500,000 people. And then if you factor in the, you know, they're counting illegal aliens for purposes of political districts, which should not be done, just across the board in the entire country, that should not be done, because you're basically saying that if a district has 40% illegals, then the actual citizens who can vote in that district have more proportional power than citizens in a district with 5% illegal. So there's a lot of reasons to do it. Texas came up with a good map that, compared to a lot of Democrat states, is still not nearly as favorable to ours as some of these states are to their own to Democrats. So they come up with a map that does +5 in theory, +5 Republican districts. And they got the map out of committee. And then the Texas Speaker of the House, when he had everyone in a quorum, decided to break for the weekend and give them 4 days to go strategize with Hakeem Jeffries. And now they've left the state. So they're denying quorum, which means that no legislative business can take place. These Democrats openly admitted it. They've left the state. They've driven out of the state. They've flown out of the state. A lot of them have gone to Illinois, which, by the way, their map is way more gerrymandered than anyone could accuse Texas of doing. I think Texas's map is legitimate on a lot of perspectives, but they're denying quorum. Now, this is important to understand. The governor of Texas can basically vacate their seats. He can say that they have abandoned their position, and under Texas Constitution and various precedents, he can just deem these as vacant. Now, he did put out a press release this morning saying he was going to begin that process, but he was going to do it through a path that goes through the courts instead of just doing it unilaterally, which is kind of just Abbott being Abbott, which is he says what people wants to hear, but if you read in between the lines, it's like the bare minimum. That's kind of what he's doing again, is the bare minimum. Also, the Texas Speaker of the House, Dustin Burroughs, who allowed all this to happen, he basically laid it out on a platter for these Democrats to do what they're doing. In many ways, he's complicit. He has the ability through the Sergeant at Arms to issue arrest warrants. Now, they can't effectuate those outside of the state of Texas because they don't have jurisdiction. But there's a lot of other things they could be doing. They could be stripping the funding for all these Democrat offices, including their staff. They could be charging them all of the costs of the Sergeant at Arms incurs in order to go try to find them. They could start a lot of different things. They could strip them of their chairmanships and committee responsibilities. There's a lot of things that could start to happen today. I think we'll need to see, but my guess is that Dustin Burroughs, more so, and probably Greg Abbott will do the bare minimum. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope I'm especially wrong when it comes to Greg Abbott. I'd love to see some real leadership on this side of him. But that's basically where we're at. They've got to get these Democrats back on the Texas floor, lock the door shut if they need to, and force them to remain while this business is conducted.
Wade, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. All right. Supreme Court matters. There's all kinds of stuff happening, all kinds of stuff still coming, and we need to talk to Bill Jacobson about it so we can sound super smart in front of all of our friends, and we will do that in just a moment. Now, something else will help you sound super smart if your mind is working right. As your testosterone levels drop, there's a fog that descends on your mind. Did you know that? Did you know you need testosterone for your mind more than anything else? You need it for logical thinking, for clear thinking. You're foggier not because you're older. You're foggier because your T levels are down. Do you want great energy, great focus? You want to have your mind feel like it's supercharged? Try some natural herbal supplements from CHOP. You don't have to use drugs. You know, stop sticking needles in your arm. Natural herbal supplements. Taking a male vitality stack from CHOQ is one of the greatest decisions of my life. I'm not exaggerating. One of the greatest decisions I've ever made. I'll never stop. I feel so good all the time. CHOQ.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Now, as long as we're talking about redistricting and the Supreme Court apparently is going to get involved, let's talk about the legalities of all this. What might the Supreme Court say? In fact, there's a lot we need to ask Bill Jacobson about. Joining me now, of course, William A. Jacobson, founder of Legal Insurrection and, of course, Cornell University Law Professor. Redistricting, Bill, is the Supreme Court get involved? And why are they going to get involved if they are?
Well, they're getting involved. They're already involved in Louisiana. There's a case that is up for argument. I don't know if they've set a date, but it's before the Supreme Court as to whether there was unlawful racial gerrymandering in Louisiana. But it's even bigger than that. The question before the court is whether the Voting Rights Act of 1965, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, is unconstitutional if to the extent it requires that race be taken into effect when drawing congressional districts. And that's huge, because what has happened in multiple states in the South is that Democrats have secured extra seats. Not sure we have a precise calculation how many, but at least several extra congressional seats, because the states have been required to have a certain number of majority Black congressional districts. And the question is that constitutional? Can the Voting Rights Act essentially do away with the constitutional protection of equal protection? And that's the issue that the court has just requested extra briefing on. It's unusual, it's not unheard of, but the court on its own said, hey, we want more briefing on this specific issue. And so that's what's before the court. And it will be enormous if the court rules that the Constitution prevails, not the Voting Rights Act, and that the courts cannot insist that various states create majority Black districts. In fact, Clarence Thomas, who of course is, you know, an absolute, star on the court, wrote a separate opinion on this issue of taking up extra briefing. And he said, hey, why don't we just decide it now? What are we stalling for? So it's pretty obvious which way he's gonna go. And there must be a majority or at least significant number of justices who are at least interested in such a ruling. And it would be an absolute earthquake for the Democrats.
Okay, so honestly, I can see people sitting up in their chair. I can see them right through the camera right now, Bill, saying, wait, we have racial districting in the country? For a lot of people, because this is so deep down in the weeds, they just don't ever get all the way down there. They didn't even realize this was a thing, but states really sit down and try to carve out a special congressional district for Black people, don't they?
Well, yes, and historically the reason was is that in certain states, they gerrymandered districts to deprive Blacks of having any real voting power. And so there was a pushback against that. But the argument now is we're beyond that. This is not 1965 anymore. It's, 2025. And that statistically and the analyses show that that sort of, racial detriment, that sort of essentially boxing Black voters out of existence isn't a thing anymore. And so therefore, why are we still doing this? And that's really the issue that the court's gonna have to decide. And it's, I think, significant that in the briefing before the court, what decision are they talking about? Well, they're talking about the affirmative action decision. And now that we've had that ruling in 2023 from the Supreme Court, why aren't we applying the same principles to congressional districts? And so this would be the fallout from the affirmative action ruling in 2023. And if this happens, when I say it will be an earthquake for Democrats, it could cost them, I've seen estimates of 5 to 10 seats around the country, if race neutrality becomes the measure for congressional districting. And you will see howls, not abortion ruling level of howls, not, violence in the streets, but given the current political posture, there will be screams if the Supreme Court, consistent with the affirmative action ruling, says you cannot take race into account when drawing congressional districts.
I can't even believe we live in a place where that's a thing. All right, let's move on to other things. Bill, I thought we solved this problem of these lower court judges stopping the president of the United States overexceeding their authority, wildly overexceeding their authority. I thought all this got shot down, yet every single day I wake up, I roll over, I pull up my phone, and there's a new wacky judge doing something. Why is this still happening?
Well, as I predicted on your show previously, we can roll the tape, that what the Supreme Court did was great in theory, was significant when they ruled out these universal injunctions. They've been doing decent things in terms of issuing stays of lower court injunctions, but it's still happening because you have district court judges who disagree with the Trump administration. You read their opinions and they're like political manifestos, and it's essentially an insurrection against the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has refused to be very clear with the lower courts what the lower courts need to do. When they issue a stay, which means put on hold one of these crazy injunctions from a district court, for the most part, the Supreme Court doesn't explain why. And so then what you have is you have another judge come along, similar case, and the judge says, well, we never actually got a reasoning from the Supreme Court. We don't know why they put that other injunction on hold. So there's nothing for me to follow. I'm not bound by anything. John Roberts, I've said it before, needs to use his bully pulpit against the district court judges, much like he has used it against Trump and Trump supporters, okay, when they've criticized the court. But in many district courts, not all, but in many of them, there is an insurrection against Supreme Court authority. They are refusing to follow Supreme Court rulings, and the excuse they're using is, well, we don't have clear guidance from the Supreme Court. Well, the Supreme Court needs to start giving them more clear guidance and needs to set out the ground rules, because what's happening now is running out an attempt by some judges to run out the clock. You can't read their opinions, you know, and not come to the conclusion that they just don't like the Trump policies and they just don't like Trump, and therefore they're going to rule a certain way. Again, not all of the judges, but enough of them to really muck up the system.
What's happening in Rhode Island? Are white teachers being targeted? What's happening here?
Yeah, so Legal Insurrection and our Equal Protection Project for almost 3 years has been challenging an outrageous program in the Providence Public School District, which is the largest school district in the state by far. It's a disaster in terms of student education. It was so bad, the state had to take it over. So the kids are proficiency at grade level is someplace around 10% of the students. But the district is obsessed with, yes, it's horrible. It's beyond horrible. I've seen for math, I think it's below 10% at grade level. And so the district, though, all they care about is DEI. All they care about is racial stuff. And they created a program along with a group called the Rhode Island Foundation, the largest charity in the state, $1.5 billion charity, to hire more teachers into the system because nobody wants to work there. And the charity would pay off up to $25,000 of their student loans for new teachers, with a big catch, only if you're non-white. And they literally named the program the Educator of Color Loan Forgiveness Program. We challenged it. The Department of Justice has now opened an investigation. The EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, just came out with a final determination that this was likely a violation of the law. But in Rhode Island, they don't care. Rhode Island's a heavily Democratic state, but worse than that, it's become heavily progressive. It's far left wing. It's not like the old Democratic Party in Rhode Island, which was very blue collar, working class. Now it's the elites. And they are pushing these things, and they don't care. We have complained loudly. We've gotten a lot of media coverage. The attorney general is silent. The political leadership is silent. Fortunately, it looks like the Trump Department of Justice and it looks like the Trump EEOC are going to go after the school district. But the question I'm asking is, why aren't they going after this Rhode Island Foundation? Rhode Island Foundation helped create the program, administer the program, and fund the program. So I've been calling for a year now, over a year now, for the Department of Justice to go after the Rhode Island Foundation. And that's what's going on. This is emblematic of the problem at the local and state level. Even though we have all these great Supreme Court rulings, even though we have all these great civil rights laws, the progressive Democrats do not care. And at the state level, they will not be held accountable.
Stay on them, Bill. Appreciate you as always. All right, let's lighten the mood. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And Elizabeth Warren, I'll play you the video in a moment. She fell on the Senate floor. And believe it or not, I'm not playing this to make fun of her, because I actually don't think it's funny when old people fall. It's always bothered me. I'm playing this because I feel like this is happening to me more and more, and I don't know why. I'll lean on something that's not very solid, and I'll just fall. I'll try to sit down. I did this last night in my chair. I tried to sit down, and I kind of missed the chair, so I like sat on the arm of it and almost fell off it. I don't know what's happening. Maybe it's just getting older, but I feel you, Liz.
Senators voting in the affirmative. Baldwin, Blunt Rochester, Durbin, Heinrich, Morono, Kane.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.